Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on, not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner, flying solo here on Blog Talk Radio in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, and it is April 8th, 2015, and I figured since we didn't have an Election Boycott Advocates show on Sunday, I figured I'd fly solo here. It's been a while since I did a solo show, maybe 3-4 months, and I miss it. You know, it's a natural high to get here and stand on my little soapbox, okay, and rant about the issues that really matter, not just the political scenery, corporate media, not just shadow, the bigness cast on society. This is the issues that matter. These are the issues that matter here, and you're only going to hear right here on Carson's Corner and other like-minded shows that are on the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. And I encourage you to check out thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. All right, if you want to call in, 347-326-9749, 347-326-9749. Hopefully I'm coming out loud and clear. You all can hear me very, very clearly as it's 11 o'clock past 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time here in New Jersey. And I also have the chat room open for you as well if you want to chime in there. I'll be monitoring the chat room all throughout the program. Please feel free, questions, comments, or concerns, or whatever. Please either call me or do it in the chat room. Okay? Very, very important stuff. I got to tell you, this is just so sad. This is so horrific, and it's not surprising to anybody that really has their ear to the ground. I saw the Walter Scott video. And, you know, this is just, you see this and you're surprised, but you're not surprised because we know this is going on in America on a daily basis. You know, Christopher Allen Driscoll of the Election Boycott Advocates pointed out that since the new year, we've had something like 30 or 40 black men killed in a similar fashion. And I want to really talk about this because there's so many points here, points of discussion, of course, that you're not going to get on the corporate media. This guy, Walter Scott, there was reports that he, and this relates to capitalism, there were reports that he ran from the police officer because he thought he was going to be arrested for failure to pay child support. And as he turns away and runs, the officer takes out his gun and fires something like 8 or 10 shots in the most callous way imaginable, as if he was hunting a deer, okay? And after he shoots this man in the back, this man collapses, Walter Scott collapses, okay? He runs over, he tells him to put hands behind his back, he's still yelling at the guy. They cuff him up, and after his mannerisms, his demeanor is just absolutely calm. It's as if he was just walking in the park. No type of emotion whatsoever. And they check his pulse. They're waiting for emergency services to arrive. And then there was a report that he supposedly put the taser next to Walter Scott's body. That he tried to say that Walter Scott reached for his taser and he shot him in self-defense. And the police department, and this is according to a guy from Talk Radio News on the Tom Hartman program, Congressman Bob Ney, as of this afternoon, the police department had the same lies that this officer was telling as part of their official statement. So you have a police officer shot this man cold blood, literally, shot him in the back like an animal, okay? You have the police department backing up the officer's version of events. And again, this is as of this afternoon, okay? And my question is, what would happen if the video camera wasn't there? What would happen if this individual, I don't know his name, he's speaking out to the press though, didn't record this? What would happen? I mean, how would the public react? How would this officer be held accountable for what he did? And these questions, I think it's pretty obvious. Mike, he wouldn't be held accountable. Most likely, his version, his fabricated version of events, backed up by the police department, would have stood. And now with the ruling class opposition to Ferguson, with them sweeping that under the rug, there is no discussion anymore, or there's going to be limited discussion in the corporate-owned media about these events and any type of outrage over the killing of a black man, an unarmed black man, is going to be inevitably swept under the rug by the corporate media. okay? This is happening, you know, more often than not. And Fred Goldstein writes about the racist nature reveals itself time in and time out. The racist character of this revealed itself to Walter Scott and subsequently the American public as the murder of Walter Scott was captured on film. The racist character of the state revealed itself in Los Angeles last month. A homeless man was killed, was shot. This is this. Nonetheless, he was shot and killed by police. The racist character of the state, the capital state, revealed itself in the murder of Eric Garner. Okay? And we speak about other areas of the system. We could speak about other inequities in the system. And we have. And they're important. What's important to realize is that these events are not separate, obviously. These events are by and large representative of the underlying priorities of the economic system. And that's why, you know, when we look at someone like Walter Scott, okay, we don't know the reason why he was running. Who knows? He could have been running in fear from the officer. This guy seems like a real nut job. This guy seems like a real sociopath. And believe me, I'm not one that calls, you know, police officers derogatory terms. I don't hate the police. I have a relationship with the police through my job. I don't. They're ultimately agents of bourgeoisie, because at the end of the day, when workers strike, when workers try to take to the streets, it's going to be the police that arrest them. They're there primarily to serve the interests of the ruling class. They're there to break up movements like the Occupy movement. They're there to break up any type of movement or gathering that jeopardizes the true structure of power in society. But I don't hate them individually. I don't refer to them as this, that, and the other thing. I don't do that. Even though I acknowledge the reality of what they represent. Yes, a police officer can save a poor person's life. A poor person can call the police just like a rich person can, which some say socialist ideas are what police departments and fire departments are on. But as I said, you know, they're there to serve the interest of the ruling class. They're a mere extension of the ruling class. And as capitalism continues, as the crisis of capitalism continues, the ruling class is dumping more and more money into the police state, more and more money into the prison state, and to the military, to ultimately control the population. Okay? That's what's happening. There's real social unrest. And let's just assume, for argument's sake, that Walter Scott did run because he was behind on childhood child payments. He was behind on child support payments, which if you go down to the local courthouse, you'll see there are people in court right now. There are people right now paying child support. So really we do have a version of a debtor's prison in America. Allege him that he was. Okay? That the worst scenario because he thought he'd be locked up for failure to pay for child support. One of the main reasons why this man was behind on his child support, if you want to adopt that version, if that turns out to be true, was because everybody's behind on paying their bills. Because every worker in America is being besieged by capitalism. It's because someone like Walter Scott is living in an economy where jobs are being shipped overseas. This is what's happening now. It doesn't all trace back to the individual. We don't have to have a truncated analysis of everything as is required by the capital media. This man and African Americans as a whole in this country most likely didn't have access to a decent paying job, as capitalism forces labor to be so productive that the rate of hiring and firing cannot possibly keep up with each other. That jobs are being displaced every single day in America. Skills are being put into machinery. And so you have a system now where, you know, a guy has to run from the police because of a failure to pay money and subsequently shot in the back God knows how many times. You know, this is just such an indictment on our economic system. It's so sad. And you know what? This is what's happening. This is going to continue to happen. There's no question about it. Until we, as working class Americans, until we, as the oppressed, connect each other in a fight against capital, that is the driving force. That is what is happening. And, you know, we have to educate, that's the wrong word. We have to basically convince the African-American community. We have to convince those, as Christopher Allen Driscoll says, are doubly and triply oppressed by the system. We have to convince them to dump the economic system, to not be like grasshoppers and go from issue to issue as the corporate media wants, as the ruling class wants. We have to be centralized around one issue. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, if we have economic justice in America, if we have equality, if we have a system where the wealth is collectively produced, distributed by society as a whole, then we don't have to have people like Walter Scott running because he didn't pay a fine, because he didn't pay child support when there is virtually no access to jobs anymore. Where in 4 or 5 years, you're going to have half of jobs in America at minimum wage. Where the value of the dollar is just decreasing. It's now less than it was in the 1960s. You would not have this. And sure, you know, no society is perfect. Believe me, if you go to some of the Nordic countries, I'm sure you could find crime, and I'm sure you could find related instances. But you know what? It's rampant here in America. This type of you know, murder illustrates itself every single day in this country because we're a vastly unequal society. We are more unequal than the hierarchies in Latin America. I mean, and it's getting worse because that's what capitalism requires. Capitalism requires a reserved army of the unemployed that are available for use at any given time. And so, you know, if Walter Scott didn't pay bills, he would have been put in jail. That would have been put in as part of the prison contract system. And this is another thing that we have to look at, the restructuring of capitalism, captive labor, calls it. We have captive labor right now where we have over 2 million prisoners, the world's largest prison population. United States of America makes up 5% of the world population, roundabout. We have 25% of the world's prison population. We have Wall Street, these prison camps, prison contracts, these for-profit companies that use capital labor, which is bankrolling this whole goddamn thing. This whole system is bankrolled by Wall Street. It's one of the contradictions, I would argue, of capitalism, is here you have Wall Street, a sick system, Wall Street, the investment banks and trading stocks and bonds, which rule the corporate media. I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper. You can't watch a TV show or listen to a transport without hearing these economic abstractions. Wall Street tanks the economy in 2008, subprime mortgages, again, another in the capital system. And they collapse the economy and send millions of people out of jobs, lose millions of people for retirement. I mean, we know the human cost associated with Wall Street over the course of two or three decades is really immeasurable. You can't really measure it. It's almost impossible. But the ultimate irony is that Wall Street will collapse the economy, will ship jobs overseas, will be the financier of the state, and put a stranglehold over the state so they can continue to get money with the rate of profit. Wall Street, and when you get a job, Wall Street will pay a private or profit prison to have you work for 40 cents an hour, 40 cents a day, whatever prisoners are making in society. There's something wrong. Companies like WAG and others, they'll trade their stocks and they'll make more money by locking more people up. There's something wrong with this society. It is a sick, sick system, ladies and gentlemen. And all of these issues are all related. And until we have a real centralized opposition, until we say, you know what, it's the economic system. When the civil rights workers organized, when they protested, marched, okay, those acts of themselves were noble, but the end result of voting is not noble, because you cannot have equality through the ballot box. Economic equality to require us to reject the ballot box, to reject the hegemony that the ruling class have over our society, and this is how they rule, and go on strike. Take to the streets. What happened in Ferguson should be multiplied in every city. You know, millions of people that are exercising non-compliance, participating in non-compliance and saying, you know what, no, I'm sorry, we need control of the economic system. This rule, this form of oligarchy, capitalism, perhaps in any form, is undemocratic. It's not producing results that are in the best interest of society. And we're no longer going to participate. We're no longer going to sell our labor. We're no longer going to be treated as commodities. We're going to take over the system, and that's it. And you're just going to have these type of assaults on black men, on poor working class individuals continue, because nobody is that I could see, with the exception of a very, very few groups out there, nobody is really mad at the right system. Nobody is really focusing on the bigger picture here. Everybody, to a large extent, is being inundated by corporate propaganda. And so it's, what did Rand Paul say? Oh, what happened here? What happened there? What did this politician say? What did the Fox News? No, it's all irrelevant. We need to be talking about issues that face the working class. We need to be talking about the capitalist system and what is happening to the working class. We have nothing in store in this right now. Nothing. I mean, I keep on pointing this out. In another 5-10 years, there's not going to be more jobs in America. There's going to be less jobs. Okay? All indication is, all the indicators that we have tell us that, you know, listen, you're just going to have to be more and more and more competitive. Under the guise of remaining competitive, the capitalists will tell us that we have to do whatever we have to do. If we have to work two jobs, That's what you have to do to survive. If you have to go into debt, that's what you have to do to survive. Whatever you do, don't look at the system. No, the system's fine. The system's fair. It's fine. There's no other way. You know, this is everything. Take my word for it. Everything has been tried, and capitalism is the only answer. You know, capitalism is natural. It's just it encompasses the entrepreneurial spirit, and it's great. This and that. Well, no, we have to wake up to the fact that no, it's not great. No, workers have nothing in store in this system. A growing majority of Americans are like me, you know, who can't find a decent job. They're like Walter Scott, who are behind on bills because of the economic system, not because of individual initiative. Remember, the working class in America are not in the position they're in because of what they've done, as the capitalist media want everybody to believe. They're in the position because of what has been done to them. A debased corporate culture, the outsourcing of jobs, the capitalist system taking us into the abyss, taking more and more and more from the American worker, the shedding of labor, the squeezing of workers' pay to keep up with the declining rate of profit in the capitalist system. Those are to blame for the poverty among the working class, not the individual. It's a very important point, because as I say time and time again on this program, is, you know, they can blame the individual to the molecular level. Okay, you could, if you want to blame the individual, you know, the capitalist will take a microscope and look at your brain and say, oh, you know, your brain's not functioning correctly, and you know, there's a problem in the wiring, and you blame the individual to the molecular level. Okay, and that's not something that we need to do, because unlike the ruling class, and I think what unites us boycotters and what unites us reckless really is our faith in the working class. That's what unites me. You know, I tell you, I have no faith in the ruling class. I think they're the most despicable people that that we could possibly have. You know, businessman, the business community, they represent the worst of us. You know, who's more likely to cut somebody off in traffic? Who's more likely to cheat and work the system? Who's more likely to be quiet and reserved and manipulate people and con people? You know, who's more likely to do that? A rich person is. Who's less likely to give to charity? Who's less likely to pay freaking taxes? Who's less? It's the wealthy. And to be wealthy in America, you have to be indifferent to humanity, and your wealth has to, in some form or another, come at the expense of society. All wealth can be traced back to the shedding of labor, to marginalization of labor. Okay, us radicals realize, and I've been saying this for a long time, that it is inherent in us as workers to want to work hard, to want to foster our creativity, to help people, you know, to create an equal society. It is inherent upon us to make the right decision. Is perfect, you know, the exception does not constitute the rule, right? The you know, and so we all believe that, and by and large that's true, and you have a small section of society that doesn't want to play by the rules and doesn't want to do constructive, and these people are always going to exist in any society. There's no question about that. But we have to recognize that these people represent the exception, the rule. Everything in the comics media is given to you as the rule. Every bit of anecdotal evidence that is used to convince you that there is opportunity out there, that, you know, you can make it, and, you know, you could succeed, and this and that. You know, all those statements through, really the exception. They really are. And, again, as I said, a growing number of Americans, a growing number of the class are finding themselves in conditions similar to Walter Scott. And so, you know, if we agree on that, if we workers agree on that, that we're all basically people, with the exception of those at the top that have the money, control the discourse, control every aspect of our society, and our lives come down to a business decision, which is not only legal in the capital system, it's glorified, then, you know, we could start to say, okay, you know, we could build a real movement, a movement of us, a movement of workers, and we could control things, and we can make the decisions, and we could have worker-owned cooperative. You know, we spoke a couple weeks ago about China, okay? And this is really an important point because, you know, Christopher, if you want to go back and listen to them, that show did very well. We had a number of downloads for that show because we spoke about the German Wings disaster. We spoke about China and Venezuela. China, you know, has really adopted a mixed market economy. China has, although they're not near us in terms of their income, okay, the Chinese workers make far below what American workers make. There's no question about that. China, obviously, is a much larger country. But they have state-owned enterprise, a very large businesses in China are state-owned, okay? And the enterprises that are not state-owned are by and large worker cooperatives, okay? And what if they've done? They've used capitalism where it suits them. They've used capitalism to foster technology, okay? Now China's the largest manufacturer in the world, okay? They have the largest economy in the world. And they've shown us, yeah, you know, you could be a third world country 34 years ago, but it had a partial, a mixed economy comprised of the elements I mentioned, then you can really experience an acceptable rate of growth, 17-18%. Here in America, you know, can 2-3% growth as a positive thing. And keep in mind, you know, stable growth under the capitalist system is not possible. On the system that we have is not possible. It's not. I mean, you know, you could look at when Ronald Reagan came in. Reagan, his presidency surely was a revolution. Reagan continued the restructuring of capitalism that we talked about on this program so long. Jimmy Carter, deregulation of the mergers and acquisitions subsequent to Jimmy Carter's deregulation. The dropping of the tax rate, the giving the wealthy more money, which produces a whole host of negative activities in our society. And then, you know, when Reagan left office, you had a virtually the same unemployment rate, which, again, unemployment rates don't make that much of a difference because it's government statistics. And government statistics do not reflect the actual problem. They don't give you an idea. They're highly politicized. But, you know, we experienced negative growth. we had low growth by and large for a decent percentage of the Reagan administration, and it was the same thing with George W. Bush. I mean, that's just been a constant economic boom and collapse, economic boom and collapse. And that is what we see in this system, and therefore during the Bush administration, the last 3 months of the Bush administration, we lost something like a million jobs. We had negative GDP growth. The bourgeois economy was in free fall. Okay? And while this is happening, China is lending us money. China is our bank. China is building up their infrastructure. China has, a skyscraper than we do. I mean, I have a libertarian friend that always goads me into arguing with him, and he'll type up China, and he'll show me some impoverished, Chinese villages, or he'll show me some smog. You want to live in that? That's how they think. It's an either-or, situation. If I say something nice about Cuba, he'll Google something and look at the poverty in Cuba. Look. Nobody's saying it has to be an either-or situation. I'm not saying that. I want to move out of here right now. It's the sort of love it or leave it fallacy. It's this either-or simplification that locks us into the status quo. Nobody's saying that. We want to go and live in Cuba, although I know people that do. And maybe life in Cuba, depending upon your strata in the working class, maybe life in Cuba would be desirable. You can't tell me that somebody doesn't have health care right now that is forced to undergo some sort of treatment or receive medical care that just costs so much. You can't tell me that they wouldn't like to be in Cuba right now, consistent. You can't tell me like they wouldn't be in Canada or whatnot. But what we should acknowledge is these systems have better outcomes than we do. These countries do. And where they're better than us, we should adopt these policies. We should, again, diversify our economy, okay? And that's the point when, when you bring up Venezuela, how Venezuela, under a socialist government, has cut poverty dramatically in that country. And the United States declared this country an enemy state. It's really embarrassing. It really is. It shows you just flexible capitalism. It shows you just how the system really has become, where any type of uprising anywhere in the world is a threat and needs to be disposed of. And, these capitalists have the American people line and sinker. There's just a few people out there that are, considered radicals because capitalism and discourse has gone so astray that any mention, any type of questioning of capitalism, any type of analysis that we're offering here is alien. It's literally foreign to, people that are controlled by hegemony, that the ruling class has for us. But I got to tell you, we really have to jump to the core. I'm going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. I'm going to take a little break, maybe play a clip or so. And I want you to hang in there. Feel free to call me, 347-326-9749, also in the chat room as well. So we're going to take a brief time out. We'll be right back after this clip.
Right now, big banking, software, pharmaceutical, and tobacco corporations are lobbying governments from 12 countries to negotiate the dirtiest deal you've never heard of. There's a reason you haven't heard of the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership. There are some major corporations and government officials that don't want you to know what's in the deal. for one, our food safety standards, environmental protections, and local labor laws could all be threatened under the TPP. We could all be forced to pay significantly more for the medicines we need, and you could be fined or even sent to jail for downloading copyrighted content on the internet. How will they know if you do it? Because your internet service providers could be required to watch your online activity. But that's not even the scariest part. The TPP gives corporations the power to sue our government in secret foreign tribunals over any law or regulation they claim affects their expected future profits. Don't believe it? It's already happening. Recently, after Canada said U.S. big pharma corporation Eli Lilly's drug price raising patents were not legit, the firm sued the Canadian taxpayers for a staggering $500 million. And now billions of dollars are being demanded from Germany after it decided to phase out nuclear power following the Fukushima disaster and improve environmental standards for coal-fired electric plants. Philip Morris and Chevron are in on the game too, raiding taxpayer dollars and trying to reverse crucial policies we all rely on. Thankfully, not everyone is willing to sign on the dotted line just yet. In fact, most government officials still have no idea what they're even signing on to, for good reason. So far, Democrats and Republicans in the House of Representatives have united against fast-tracking the TPP. But there is a mighty corporate lobby that wants to make sure the deal is signed and railroaded quickly through Congress before we know about the damage it will cause us. We must get our senators and representatives to stop fast-track. Here's the deal. Without a strong public outcry, politicians will only hear the concerns of multinational corporations. And once the TPP is signed, it's here forever. There's no expiration date and no separation clause. This dirty deal has been deliberately branded as a free trade agreement. It is anything but free for people like you and me. And it's not really about trade. It could cost us our internet freedom, labor rights, access to affordable medicine, the safety of our food, and protections that keep our water and air clean. Nobody wants to be stuck with a backroom deal we don't want and never voted for. Find out more, speak up, and spread the word.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being with us here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. If you want to give me 347-326-9749, that is 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open for you as well. And that was a little clip I played for awareness, raising awareness against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we understand that when Congress break, they're going to try to put this through fast track, and you know, this is just really unbelievable, but it's not unbelievable because, as I've said on this program before, this is required for the system. You know, they have to further reduce our wages, they have to further circumvent our courts, they have to further make it difficult to regulate our operations. They have to basically obliterate the countervailing institutions, you know, any type of union, any type of regulatory agencies, any type of worker solidarity. They have to get rid of in order to keep up with the declining rate of profit. And so it's no wonder that they're going to push this through. They're going to try to ram through the laws. Many groups now converging. There's a lot of pressure, but you know what? It doesn't matter because do you see a discussion about this on the corporate media? I didn't think so, ladies and gentlemen. Do you see anybody raising Cain over the fast track of TPP? Instead, we have President Obama, who laughably in the past has said that income inequality is the defining issue of our time. We have him pushing this trade agreement. We have him pushing this Chamber of Commerce corporate back deal through his administration, lobbying members of Congress. Just a disgusting, disgusting human being, President Obama is. And, you know, at this rate, Walter Scott, how does TPP and free trade agreement relate to, you know, what we saw on April 4th with the murder of Walter Scott? I would submit to you that it has a great deal to do with what we have, what we saw. I mean, you go back to the passage of the first NAFTA, okay, which, again, you could trace it back to Wall Street speculation. It was these Wall Street banks, these Wall Street investment banks, that basically collapsed the Mexican currency, and you know, they suffered. The Mexican people, after the austerity measures were applied, as we've seen so often, the American people suffered the subsidizing of corn. Us putting, you know, Mexican corn growers out of business. It really, really has turned Mexico into more and more of an impoverished nation, and it's unfortunate, but it's history repeating itself. And again, there's just absolutely no discussion about this in the corporate media, which is why shows like this are just so important. But, you know, again, we go back to President Obama, and I don't like to talk about President Obama that often. Okay, we agree essentially, I think, on the election boycott advocates' side, that President Obama really represents elite interests. I mentioned Wall Street. Well, it was President Obama that famously told Wall Street that he's here to help them, that his administration is the only thing that stands in between the public and the pitchforks. And he was right about that, because people like Timothy Geithner and others really represent the true character of the Obama administration. And they really represent the true character of President Obama. But it goes to show you the point that we've been making all along, is that, you know, free trade was by and large delivered to the American people, inflicted upon the Mexican people, and inflicted upon the American workers by the Democrats, by and large. It was Bill Clinton, it was the new Democrats, right, under his leadership, that learned about free trade in college and teamed up with corporate America and delivered this. And President Obama is from school. Again, President Obama, this is what he was taught. This is what he, I would like to say, believe the man does even anything. Now, the man is a mere puppet, okay? Doesn't matter what he says, just look at his deeds. Look at his sentences. They speak volumes about him and the political state. And so the Democrats in the capitalist system are the more effective evil. It's the Democrats that create a model for austerity. It was Democrats that recommended cuts to Social Security and means testing of Medicare. And you know what's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen? As capitalism requires the working class to move further into the abyss, as workers are going to have to give more and more and more to the ruling class, what's going to happen is these cuts that President Obama and his team recommend, grim grand bargain, as Paul Street calls it, in 2011, these cuts are going to become reality sooner or later. They're already doing it to Social Security. You know, Social Security, I think it was a couple months ago that the Republican Party basically eliminated funding for if they – I don't have any details, but I may get a few things wrong. But basically, you know, if the Social Security overpaid or had more money than it needed to shell out in benefits. And keep in mind, Social Security is not just for elderly people. It's for widows, I believe, and it's for disabled individuals. Social Security had more money than recipients. That money would be put back in the Social Security Trust Fund, and I think redistributed to recipients. But now that doesn't happen anymore. Now it's you know, if there's no more money left for the disabled, or if there's no more money left for the aforementioned recipients, then that money doesn't go back to them. And if I may get a wrong detail here and there, may not be exactly how it is, but basically they've begun tampering with the money in the security trust fund. But this is a microcosm of what's happened, because we're going to see this happen. Take for it, ladies and gentlemen. So security business is deprived of Social Security. They have been for, and it's been decided in the business community that they will privatize Social Security. It's only a matter of when. It's only a matter of when. And President Obama and the Democrats are a big part of that. Okay, and so that's why it's so important for us to reject elections, reject the farce, reject even paying attention to, you know, political races. Maybe you can, you know, just it's always good, I think, to a certain extent, to at least monitor what's going on, at least keep your eye on what's going on. But really, at the end of the day, your effort should be, in joining and really, really challenge the balance of power. Joining a movement that, you know, can really give power, can really emancipate the American. Going where your class is. That's another important point. I think it was Vladimir Lenin that said, you have to go where your class is. And that's a very, very important point, because it really allows us to foster class solidarity, okay? And, you know, again, we're not going to get there through the ballot box. The ballot box is no root of power for the American worker out there. And most American workers do not vote, as we've continually pointed out on the program, is that we're not in a minority here. Most people, most workers, do not vote because they have no choice at the ballot box. Elections are a mere farce. Politicians are not elected to change anything. Politicians are elected to keep things the same. And that's absolutely true. Has anything changed since President Obama has been in office? Has President Obama really changed the balance of power? No, absolutely not. I mean, if you want me to go down the line, you can look at issue after issue. You could see President Obama hasn't changed anything. You want to talk about the prosecution of whistleblowers? You want to talk about the dismantling of Occupy? You want to talk about the union busting under President Obama? You want to talk about deregulation of industries. In fact, President Obama actually bragged about how he's cut more regulations under his administration than George W. Bush did. I mean, you talk about wars internationally? I mean, Jesus. President Obama has been the most, you know, warmongering president that we've had. Okay? As Ralph Nader said, Obama will be an Uncle Tom of the corporate world. And he's absolutely right. It's one thing that, well, Ralph Nader is right on a lot of things. Black unemployment, you want to talk about unemployment rate? I mean, really, you know, it's really, really remarkable. But, again, it's been estimated that at least two-thirds of the eligible voters out there, two-thirds of the people do not vote, okay? And that's important, because they're not voting for a reason, and they're not voting because, by and large, when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. The system is not designed for change. The system cannot tolerate change because of those on the system. That's such an inflexible system. That's why no matter who's in control, corporate America merely has to readjust their deficit. Corporate America gets the same treatment. The ruling class get the same treatment. Wall Street gets the same preferential treatment. They get to do whatever the hell they want. One especially frank congressman said they own the place. Yeah, well, they do own the place. And that's going to continue regardless of who's in power because the game is corrupt. The system is warped. Okay? And so, why participate anymore? Why not do something meaningful? Why not get to work in a real, real effect? And that is why you must support the election boycotts, ladies and gentlemen. That is why you must spread noncompliance. That is why you have to realize that the most effective form of noncompliance is not marching. Marching has its place. I don't want to denigrate marching. I've only been on a few marches in my life, and they've been liberating, no question about it. But the most effective form of noncompliance is a mass strike. That's what's going to change the system. That's what's going to hurt the ruling class, because all the ruling class cares about is power or is profit. Okay? And power is how you get things done, and that's what they use. They use profit to illustrate power. And so, you know, there are more of us than there are of them, that's for sure. If we can marginalize these people, if you can have a true cultural revolution where everything is worker-owned, and we marginalize those that have money, marginalize those that are not where the workers are, and basically take the power back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now we've got about 3 minutes left here. Wow, this hour went by fast, huh? Went by very, very fast. And I'm glad because I got to go to work tomorrow. I got an interview. You know, I've actually been on a couple job interviews. I actually went on a job interview today, but it pays a lot more than what I'm making. But I got to tell you, it's a cutthroat job. It's a sales job. And I'm not really the salesman personality, as you maybe can tell. I don't know. And then I have another job, a management position job, tomorrow that I'm interviewing for. And you know, either way, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like, you know, you could make a little bit more money, I guess, and maybe it'll be a little bit more palatable, but it doesn't really make a difference because these jobs, as I've been pointing out, are really under pressure, under duress. And so you're going to have just a huge supply of labor, which is, again, driving everybody crazy and hurting everybody. So we'll see. I'll keep you updated on that. This Sunday we should have another edition of Carson's Corner with the election boycott advocates. Okay, we're going to be joined by Christopher and hopefully Thomas. Thomas is in the hospital awaiting heart surgery, and I got to get an update with him. I called him. I got to hear back from him. But in the meantime, if you want to check me on Facebook, you can at facebook.com/ Bob Carson MMA. You could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Bob Carson MMA. Make sure to support the commonsprojectnetwork.com. Also, make sure to support the election boycott advocates at electionboycott.weebly.com. And you can also search us on Facebook at the election boycott advocates. Make sure to join our group and participate in any of the discussions there. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob Carson of Carson's Corner. Until next time, show some respect.